afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Friday, June 15th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Friday, Melody, and happy National Martini Day. Now, isn't that a coincidence?
Oh, really, it is. It's 5 o'clock somewhere to start those martinis.
Indeed it is.
As long as you use GG, anyway.
That's right.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us today. And, they just hit the complete commodity sector today all across the board. It just wasn't gold and silver. It was corn, wheat, soy. It was everything that got hammered today. And the only thing you can sort of relate it to is, the trade war. And, of course, the expectation of China hitting our farmlands, the crops, the agriculture sector, perhaps followed it all the way across. Although I have said that we've seen the dollar getting a little bit stronger this past couple of days, and gold really didn't respond. So I think it was just a little bit of it just was enough to force the gold prices down today. I do believe, and I've said this before and again, I do believe it is temporary. It's a fantastic buying opportunity. And so let me get to my prices here. I don't know why I got that strange page. Even the gold prices don't want to show what they did today. But we had 22 bucks to the downside at 1,280. So gold just got hammered. Silver, worse, almost 3.5% to the downside, down 59 cents at 1664. Platinum was down 18, almost 2% at 891. Palladium was down almost 2%, also down 18 at 993. The USDX today was weaker slightly, not by much, 0.10 at 94.78. And when I said they hit commodities, they also hit oil. It was down 2.19 at 64.70. And the paper markets today, it was weird. From the get-go this morning, the Dow was down 200 points, maybe 215. I didn't see it any lower than that. And it just stayed there all day long. You see a few ticks up, a few ticks down, a few ticks up, a few ticks. But it was like it didn't move. And then here in the last hour of trade, they were able to bring it back down over 200 points to 85. So it's 25,090. So they were able to keep it at that 25,000 level. And it's an important level. NASDAQ was down 14 points at 7,746. Most of the day, the NASDAQ was up. The tech-heavy markets were higher most of the day and reversed here at the end. The S&P barely moved, down 3 at 2,779. 10-year yield was down 0.02, 292%. 2.92%. The euro was holding that 116 level after that big drop yesterday. And so, perhaps gold just really caught up with that trade from yesterday, because I did think it was a little bit odd. The emotion driving the market is still at 61. It's been hovering around 58, 54. They popped it over to 61 with some of the news reports that came out this week. Bitcoin continues to drop. That was down a little over 1.5% at 65.49. So, it seems like the tariffs is the boogeyman of all this reasoning as far as why the a little bit of pressure on the markets. Again, we were told that the administration is going to impose about a 25% tariff on up to $50 billion in Chinese goods. And this isn't new news. I mean, this is the same stuff that's been floating around for how long, Dave?
Several weeks. Just bringing it to bear today.
Well, no, but I mean, the point is it shouldn't have that much of an impact on the markets.
Oh, you think
the markets were already,
You know, perhaps they didn't have it as built in as, you know, we were led to believe, but...
You know, so, you know, again, it's this action comes in light of China's theft of the intellectual property and technology. And Chinese Commerce Ministry responded quickly to Trump's statement, "We will immediately introduce taxation measures of the same scale and the same strength. All the economic and trade achievements previously reached by the two parties will no longer be valid at the same time." And this was a statement Beijing had said in a statement released by CNBC. So I guess there were these trade talks when this initially was reported. They started talking, hoping to avoid the tariffs and so forth. So I guess those discussions are unable to be achieved. The United States Trade Representative said the U.S. will initially impose a set of tariffs on 818 items. That's worth about $34 billion on July 6th. There's going to be separate measures affecting 284 products, and that's going to be worth about $16 billion. Dave, are you there? Yoo-hoo. Did I lose you? No, maybe we did lose Dave, so I'll just go ahead and continue.
Here we are. Oh, here we are. We had a plug issue. My apologies, ladies and gentlemen. The action today marks the administration's latest move to crack down on, you know, what they deem as unfair trade practices by, you know, not just China, but all of our major trading partners. We're already embroiled in escalating trade conflicts with Canada, Mexico, and the European Union. Now, those entities all cried foul and retaliated when we imposed steel and aluminum tariffs on them. Taken together, these trade conflicts and the threat of even more barriers raise the specter of damage to a healthy American economy, you know, that the administration frequently trumpets. Speaking to Fox and Friends this morning, President Trump downplayed concerns about a trade war with China, saying the trade war was started many years ago by them and the United States lost. Now, China's discontent with the tariffs could also affect another key administration effort, that is, the push to get North Korea to abandon its nuclear and missile programs. Getting the North to agree to, you know, firm denuclearization as we define it, will rely in large part on the application of international economic sanction. And China, who's North Korea's only major ally, is critical to that effort to keep economic pressure on North Korea and Kim Jong-un. Now, following a summit between our president and Kim this past week that led to a loose commitment on denuclearization, China suggested it could relieve sanctions on the North. This is very interesting. But the one reaction that I find fascinating, and I haven't been able to read about any insights into that, was the Senate's top Democrat, the minority leader Chuck Schumer, who said today Trump's actions are on the money. Melody?
Well, you know, which doesn't make, you know, you have Senator Orrin Hatch. He applauded Trump for taking on China. But then he goes on and says tariffs will harm American and Chinese businesses and consumers and will put economic growth in both countries at risk. He says ill-conceived trade actions that weaken the American economy, alienate allies, and invite retaliations against American businesses, farmers, and ranchers. But he's retiring, though, isn't he?
He is.
Yes, it's about time. But the U.S. Chamber of Commerce President CEO Thomas Donohue said tariffs are not the right approach. So you're going to get both sides to this, whether they are the right person. What I believe, I truly believe that China and this administration came to an agreement. And I think this $50 billion, you know, it was on, off, and now it's on again. And I think they agreed to that. Because when you know, I'll be anxious to see what products are going to be affected. And again, when you know, if it's a tit for tat type of a thing, what type of impact is it really going to have, if any? So I kind of think that they're both saving face. You know, the administration is saving face. You know, China is you know, they're looking like they're, you know, is not going to be thrown around. Trump looks like he's not going to be, you know, dictated by, you know, the these unfair trade agreements and so forth. So I don't know. I think we'll just have to, it's something else that we're just going to have to wait to see how it truly affects the economies, you know.
An interesting,
because
interesting collusion theory there, Melody. And I choose my words wisely.
No, it's just, you know, how they work. I mean, to me, I don't think $50 billion is a big deal. When what's the trade deficit with China?
500, 10 times that.
So, you know, you put it all into perspective, what's the big deal? Something's better than nothing. But then again, you bring in North Korea. Why would we do something that would make China, you know, not push North Korea to follow through with the denuclearization and so forth? So, yeah, you know.
I think it's why, yeah, a lot of observers are scratching their head over, you know, that very point.
So I think these small tariffs probably have been both agreed upon by both countries. So.
Well, you know, China's, as you mentioned, Commerce Ministry said it will respond immediately on the same scale to our new tariffs on Chinese goods worth up to $50 billion. And, you know, they in May, Beijing and the U.S. agreed to, quote, meaningful increases in U.S. agriculture and energy exports to China. However, the White House subsequently said it would still pursue tariffs on Chinese goods that were proposed in April, and that caused trade relations to deteriorate from there.
Well, you know, Gary Cohen, he's the former Trump advisor.
It's true.
He says he could care less about trade deficits. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, he said in an interview yesterday with the Washington Post, he said, look, I've always said a trade deficit doesn't matter. In many respects, it's helpful to our economy. Now, Cohen's comments, you know, illuminate in part why he left the White House that, you know, was interested in shifting the trade balance with our key economic partners. Cohen defended the administration's broader efforts to get allies to reduce their barriers to free trade, but he, you know, he showed a clear what's characterized as an intellectual divide with the president and some other of the top administration advisors on deficits, trade deficits. You know, Trump has argued that trade deficits were, you know, country exports more goods and services to the U.S. than we export in return. You know, the trade deficits mean foreign countries are taking advantage of the U.S. He's described deficits, with countries such as China as money lost to our trading partners. You know, he said in March, the president, that last year we lost $500 billion on trade with China. We can't let that happen again. And there's more. Right, Melody?
Yes, that is correct. And you know, you have economists that will dispute the notion of a trade deficit. I think you can have too big of a deficit, and I think we do, because it does show a lack of production for coming from this country. And that's the important part, you know, that why that deficit is as big as it is. I don't think it should be that big, but I don't know if the number of the deficit with China is relative to the numbers of purchasing and so forth, retail. You know, again, we're going to have to wait and see how this pulls through. And GDP growth is tracking close to 4%, and American consumers, they went shopping in May. They drove retail sales and economic growth higher. The economy in the second quarter is tracking close to 4% growth. At the same time, President Trump had told reporters he was holding out for a doubling of growth to a 6%. For now, his fourth This 4% forecast is close to coming true on a quarterly basis after strong retail sales data pushed up tracking GDP growth for the second quarter to about double the first quarter's level. Do we have the numbers on those retail sales? Yeah, the retail sales in May were up 0.8%, double what some economists had projected. Without autos, sales were up 0.9%.
Yeah, the primary source of the uptick in growth this in the second quarter is the consumer, which looks to be expanding real outlays at a 3.7% rate in the second quarter, following an anemic 1% pace in January through March. You know, the White House economic advisors as recently as last fall expected just the corporate tax cuts to send growth to 3% and as high as 5% within 3 years. And they could be hitting the low end of the range by the end of this year. Last December, the president was even more optimistic. So we're at 3.3% GDP, said, I see no reason why we can't go to 4 and 5 or even 6%, he said at the time. Let's see, Aerosmith, dream on, dream until your dreams come true. Anyway, sorry about that. Jobless claims also surprised economists yesterday. I'm not sure if you talked about that on the show. It fell 4,000 to a near 44-year low, Melody, of 218,000, signaling, again, what the government is characterizing at full employment. And you got Jefferies' chief financial economist, Ward McCarthy, said he sees quarterly growth averaging over 3.5% for the rest of this year. After that soft first quarter, and he expects annual growth breaking through to 3.1%. Economists said the better retail sales could be the result of improved May weather. That was after poor weather in March and April. Building supply dealers saw almost a 2.5% increase, and gasoline station sales were up 2% despite the increase in gas prices.
Well, you know, it was also noted that the net exports were also helping the GDP growth. That added about 1% this quarter. But corporate boost is not as strong as some expected. Business investment spending actually looks close to flat this quarter. So it really makes me wonder is where the number really is going to come out. I mean, if they're advertising and promoting 4%, well, you know, it's going to be over 3. So, I mean, they already know what the number's going to be, or they wouldn't be hitting it so hard. Even Larry Kudlow said in April he believes the U.S. gross domestic product could hit 5% for a time as economic growth moves back toward its long-term trend. It doesn't feel like a 4% GDP growth.
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. But what it does feel like, break time.
My words exactly.
And we'll be right back. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with Dave Allen. So we'll be back in just a few moments.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. And once a week, once in a while we'll miss, but every week we have Brevity is Golden. It is Dave's segment. And so why don't you start out this second segment with Brevity is Golden.
Thanks, Melody. You know, more than 900 new words, senses, and sub-entries have been added to the Oxford English Dictionary in their latest 2018 update. You know, coinciding with the 90th anniversary of the publication of The House at Pooh Corner, several words from Winnie the Pooh have been added to the dictionary in this update. But here's my random Baker's Dozen favorite list of their additions. The first one is apoliticism. Second one is a fun one, barbershopper. Third one is something that we probably more and more of us can relate to, binge watch. Never in the Oxford before. Cuddy Wifter is the next one. CUDDYWIFTER. We look forward to seeing that in the script spelling bee next year, Melody.
Okay, all right.
Got another strange one here, energy vampire. Jitty, J-I-T-T-Y. Leastist. Leastist. I guess it's, you know, the most hostess with the mostest, the beastest with the leastest. There's Piffy, P-I-F-F-Y, not to be confused with Pithy, P-I-T-H-Y. Scripturer. I don't know. I'm presuming that someone who follows or believes in the scriptures might now be called a scripturer. Strange one that follows Tash. T-A-S-H. I don't know what that's all about, but speaking of which, what a battery. That's another new word. What a battery, E-R-Y. Yes, sir. One word, Y-E-S-S-I-R. Surprised that's not made it in. And last but not least, something that many of us think about our president, Zeus-like. That's Zeus as in the Greek god. I must say, Melody, Cuddy Wifter is my favorite of the ones I perused. Now, if someone can only tell me what that means, my day will end in complete satisfaction. And that is this week's Brevity is Golden, Melody.
It's very interesting, and we'll have a quiz on that at the end of the year, as you have mentioned.
There you go.
Yes, and maybe in retail sales, maybe those consumers can go out and buy a dictionary. They should go out and buy the Oxford English Dictionary and just see those new words in there. So consumers have to spend more to buy the same stuff. U.S. retail sales, we talked earlier, soared in May. And total retail sales, including food services at restaurants, surged 5.9%. in May from a year ago to $501 billion. Retail sales without food jumped 6% to $443 billion. Excluding motor vehicles and parts, retail sales jumped 6.4% to $399 billion. Those are huge jumps. So it looks pretty good. The year-over-year percentage increases of total retail sales at 5.9% is at the top of the range over the past few years, Dave.
Geez, it must go to show because of just the hundreds, now in the thousands, of retail stores across the country, Melody, that have been closing and continue to this year, that so much of this must be on online shopping. But those percentages that you just mentioned are below the annual increases from 2010 through 2012, which had easy year-over-year comparisons due to the buyer strike that had occurred during the Great Recession. But these sales increases were strong across the board, except electronics and appliances, where sales only rose at 1.9%. Sporting goods, hobby, musical instruments, and bookstores sales actually fell about 7/10 of a percent. Now, you know, Tuesday inflation as measured by the CPI shed some light on, you know, what would happen in retail sales today. The CPI, as we now know, rose 2.8% in May. It's the fastest year-over-year jump since February of 2012. Conversely, the purchasing power of the dollar dropped 2.9% in May from a year ago, and that's the fastest drop since November of 2011. And the loss of purchasing power of the dollar is evenly distributed over various products throughout industry.
Well, you know, if you look beyond retail sales, the purchasing power of the dollar has essentially collapsed when it comes to buying a home in some of the hottest housing markets in the country. For retail products, the decline in purchasing power of the dollar, it can also vary. For example, in May, it took 21.8% more dollars to buy the same amount of gasoline as a year ago. But retail sales of gasoline rose only 17.7% over the same period. In other categories, the price increases were much smaller. The Commerce Department also releases retail sales adjusted for inflation. This measure of real retail sales, including food services, rose only 3.1% in May from a year ago, closer to the middle of the range over the past few years and a lot less to gush about. You know, the difference between the retail sales increase of 5.9%, not adjusted for inflation, and the real retail sales increase of 3.1%, adjusted for inflation, is the loss of the purchasing power of the dollar. That purchasing power accounts for nearly half of the increase in retail sales. It just takes a lot more dollars to buy the same thing.
That's very interesting. You know, as we know, retailers and consumer product companies love consumer price inflation. The more, the merrier. It boosts their revenues without having to sell an extra thing. And that makes the top line of their earnings reports beat expectations. But they're not so enthusiastic about the rising input costs, including wholesale prices and transportation costs, which are going up quickly. So they'll have to do some financial engineering to overcome the hit to earnings per share from those cost increases. And guess what? Share buybacks are perfect for that, Melody.
Mm-hmm.
That also allows them to bask in the glory of, you know, revenue surprises to the upside. That's induced by the loss of purchasing power of the dollar. So everyone's happy, except consumers, of course, whose wage increases just got wiped out by the eroding purchasing power of the good old dollar.
But that consumer, that they don't get it. They don't understand it, because consumer sentiment had jumped at the beginning of June, moving opposite of expectations and heading back toward levels not earlier seen this year. You had the University of Michigan's Friday report on consumer attitudes about the economy hit 99.3. in a preliminary June reading, higher than the 98.3 expected by Reuters, by a survey of Reuters economists. The index was more than a point above May's reading of 98 and rose to its highest level since hitting 104.4 in March. So consumers surveyed by the University of Michigan viewed both their current financial situation and the current buying conditions for household durables more favorable. And so, again, greater certainty about future income and job prospects have become the main drivers of more favorable purchase plans. And I guess that consumer, if you tell them things are getting better, hey, things are getting better. You know, they're
You know, your wages. I'm gonna go out and buy something.
Go out and use those credit cards.
Oh my, yeah, that's it's not surprising in this day and age. It just is. I worry about less well off folks. You know, when the day of reckoning comes, because they're going to be least prepared for it. You know, on the one hand, they don't have the most to lose in some sense, but yet with, you know, a lot less disposable income and savings, you know, when the proverbial fan hits, Melody, we know that they're going to take a big hit. You know, speaking of the working class, we're also reading about, you know, more manufacturing jobs showing up in red states than blue. What are you seeing about that?
Well, you know, there was a reporter asked Peter Navarro, President Trump's trade advisor, to respond to critics who say steel tariffs are excessive. And Peter Navarro advised them get out more often to the heartland and see what Main Street and Trump country really look like. He says, we are Team Trump, are astonished by the argument that America's future is in the services sector and Americans don't want dirty jobs and steel furnaces. The big picture that piqued the interest of chief economists at Indeed, who emailed Swan, which is the reporter who was asking Peter Navarro this, and that was Navarro's reason. I don't like Peter Navarro. But the chief economist at Indeed had said that he had looked at recent country or county level employment data and combined that with the 2016 presidential voting patterns. And he said even places that voted most strongly for Trump are primarily service producing, not goods producing economies.
Yeah, but you know, manufacturing is indeed a larger share of non-farm private employment in red states than in blue states, in red counties than in blue counties. In dark red counties, you know, those counties that voted for Trump by a 20% margin or more, the manufacturing sector accounts for 16% employment versus just 6% in dark blue counties. And excuse me one second. I thought I felt a sneeze going on, but I think it has passed. But even in the reddest counties, Melody, manufacturing still accounts for a small share of employment, only 1/6 of all jobs in the country. Looking more broadly, goods-producing sectors, you know, manufacturing, construction, and mining, are about 1/4, 24% of employment in dark red counties. Interesting, yeah.
Well, it looks like the 1/3 of small businesses can't find key workers was the headline to an article I read earlier today. And Mike Frederick shows off unmanned presses in his Manitowoc, Wisconsin company. He says they're ready to start production at MCM Composites, a 55-person enterprise that makes custom thermoset molding. The only problem? He has no one to operate them. These tools are heated to 300 degrees, but we're not running them. Had we had the people for the first shift, we could have been running this all day, but we don't. So they sit here heated, ready to go, and with no action. Frederick said the business has gone to extremes to try to find the 15 additional employees it needs, but he's had little success. There are no workers, but there's a huge demand. The economy has picked up, but the market is so thin and we just can't find them. We've gone to extraordinary measures to find people that will actually work, including going to the local county jail and recruiting people to work from inside the jail.
That's amazing.
My question is, though, I bet if they raised wages, I mean, you think it's cheaper to let them sit there all day? The tools to sit there, heated, ready to go with no action, than giving somebody an extra buck or two an hour?
No, that's a good question. I you got to believe it's affecting their bottom line, that it's impacting it negatively.
Mm-hmm.
It also, in my mind, you know, that anecdote just raises, maybe it reinforces in me the and you've have similar views on this, that, you know, the actual unemployment rate is much higher than what it's been reported by the Fed and the Department of Labor, that, you know, these other people who are out there, who are of job age, who are discouraged from looking for more work, maybe because of the lower wages, maybe for other issues, that because they've stopped working, it sounds like they're not looking for jobs. They're not seeing these job openings. And if they are seeing it, as you say, it may be because, you know, the lower wages are not providing enough incentive for them to hop back in the market. So, you know, despite record high confidence on Main Street, you know, a labor shortage issue is increasingly weighing on small businesses like Frederick's all around the country. And that proves that a strong economy can cut both ways for businesses, especially small. You know, the National Federation of Independent Businesses monthly read on sentiment, you know, labor quality is the number one issue for companies for 5 months in a row. You know, that outpaces taxes and government regulations and red tape even. You know, and last month, one-third of small business owners reported job openings they couldn't fill, and 12% reported using temporary workers. It's a big dilemma, you know, and as long as economic growth continues, which, you know, we want, you know, which is generally good for the country, you know, we're going to have to deal with some tight labor markets, it seems, for a long time to come, unless, you know, something is done here about wages.
Wages and education also. I think, too, these skills, this trade, yeah, you're right. It's not being used. It's not being, people are not, I can remember during the Great Recession 2008, as people were getting laid off, I mean, there was programs that they could go to school and get retrained and go into another skill and so forth. And so I'm not sure what happened to all those folks. But what I do hear is the music, and we're heading into a break, and we'll be right back.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Tell me again tonight. Each and every heart is seen.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. We're heading into the third segment today, and it is Friday, June 15th, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, and I want to thank each and every one of you for listening to us today. Whether you're listening to us live, or you're listening to a rebroadcast, or in the archives, I want to thank you for joining us, and if you have any questions that you would like for us to address on the program, please email me at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. You know, we kind of gotten away from asking for questions, and this week with when I was on the program with Butch, when Butch was on the program with me, we get calls and so forth. So we'd like you to email us your questions at, or a topic, just a topic if you'd like us to discuss, at discountgoldandsilver@yahoo.com. This week we were running silver specials with free shipping this week, and it was very successful, and we'd have this great drop in silver today. So today's your last chance at lower silver prices and free shipping for today. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. You know, I mentioned this yesterday, that Bitcoin, and we're just going to talk about it briefly today and maybe go a little more detailed into it, was how people believe that the Bitcoin's pricing was due to price manipulation. The epic rise last year was a little more than just investor fervor. It was new research published Wednesday showed that at least half of the jump in Bitcoin was due to a coordinated price manipulation. University of Texas finance professor John Griffin, who has a 10-year track record of spotting financial fraud, along he ought to investigate the gold and silver market then. But anyway, he'd really find a market that's been manipulated. But John Griffith, alongside a graduate student, Amin Shams, examined millions of transactions on cryptocurrency exchange Bitfinex. It's a 66-page paper, and the authors found that Tether was used to buy Bitcoin at key moments when it was declining, which helped stabilize and manipulate the cryptocurrency's price. So fraud and manipulation does leave footprints in the data. And Griffin says that it's nice to have the blockchain to track things. By tracking Bitfinex transactions, and I'm not sure if I'm saying that properly, which are recorded on a public ledger, Griffin found that Tether was used to buy Bitcoin after large price falls.
Yeah, the authors also tracked that pattern and found periods of suspicious Bitcoin price activity tied to the issuance of Tether. which is supposedly pegged to the value of the U.S. dollar. You know, it was creating price support for Bitcoin, and over the period that we examined, Griffin said, it had huge price effects. Our research indicates that there are sophisticated people harnessing investor interest for their own benefit. Surprise, surprise.
Surprise.
Yeah, you know, Griffin found that about 87 hours, or about 1% of heavy Tether trading, could explain 50% of the rise of Bitcoin and around 64% of the rise of other major cryptocurrencies. As we recall, Bitcoin rose to almost $20,000 last December after starting the year below $1,000 per coin. This year, you know, Bitcoin has lost more than half of its value, trading around $6,400, at least as of this was earlier this week, or today. So it's be careful, folks. You know, as we've urged you many times, if you don't know what you're investing in, if you don't understand it, don't do it. We know that the desire for a quick and easy buck can be alluring, but geez, here's just another, I mean, just a clear reason that we hadn't known before, but you know that some of us had sensed their manipulation. Turns out there's an awful lot of it that's been going on. So watch yourself. Stay away from this unless you know a heck of a lot about it. And even then, because it's still really speculative as an investment, don't put much of your disposable income in it, especially income that you can't afford to lose.
You know what's unfortunate is because they were able to push that price up to $20,000. It's going to take a lot for people to give up on the cryptocurrencies because they made some money, they got a taste of it, and certainly if they, you know, compare how the cryptos have been performing compared to gold, you know, cryptocurrency gave them some action, gave them some profits, gave them some losses, but it's action. And gold, doesn't do a whole lot. But yet, we just talked about earlier in the program, when you look at the retail sales numbers and you adjust it for inflation, things aren't as good as what they tell us it is. And what better way to protect your rate of inflation is with gold and silver. So gold and silver is protecting your purchasing power. And that was a prime example. And when it comes to these cryptocurrencies, you know, again, I don't know where, and we'll use Bitcoin as the example, where that has to go before people actually give up on it because it's so easily manipulated that was just described. And so, you know, you have to be so careful, so very careful, as Dave has said. And there's a lot of talk about a cashless society within 10 years. That's what a third, there was a survey, and a third of the people surveyed by Business Insights, this was done by Equifax, about methods on how we use and spend money. And a third of the people thought that we'd be in a cashless society in a decade over. It showed that 46% of people used cash less often than they did 3 years ago. More than half of the respondents still relied on coins and notes for certain transactions. Many said coins were their top payment choice for vending machines, parking meters, charity donations, and so forth. Although many said they still prefer notes when it came to paying for taxis. Many also said they thought shops, cafes, or market stalls, which only accepted cash, were convenient. Age was a major influence when it came to who would predict a cashless society in 10 years. Equifax found that over half of those in the 16 to 34 age group thought we would be reliant on digital and card payments by 2028, compared to just 22% of those aged 55 or over. And many of these people were also wary of security issues, which surrounded the digital payments via contactless cards or online transactions.
Yeah, for sure. More than a quarter, Melody said, they didn't feel confidence that their payments made online or using contactless technology were secure. And a similar number said it was difficult to track money that way. Sarah Lewis, who heads fraud at Equifax, said, we're in the midst of an exciting smart payments revolution. She said, we can pay for our lunch with our watches, and passersby are now able to donate to, you know, buskers via contactless. She added that this growth of new payments technologies is drawing us closer to a cashless society, but long-standing preferences such as cash remain in certain situations, particularly among, quote, older customers. She added that as digital and online payments continue to grow, so too does the associated fraud. Aha! It's vital that new technology is maximized to give people the reassurance they need as they change the way they spend. Somewhat ironic coming from Equifax, who, as we know, was responsible for one of the largest data breaches in history just about a year ago. Melody?
Well, I did have to look to see what buskers were.
What did you find?
You don't know?
No.
It's the person, and who would even bring this into a survey of people? I mean, like, nobody knows what it is. It's a person who performs music or other entertainment in the street. You know, people on the streets, entertainment, or another public place for monetary donations.
Okay.
So can be entertained by buskers.
I thought momentarily it might have been as people who stand on, at intersections with plastic buckets asking you to contribute to their favorite charity.
Well, busker does have to, you have to entertain.
Interesting.
So they could put that word into the Oxford Dictionary.
Well, we'll have to look in there and see if it's there.
So, buskers. So, I mean, who would even think to ask about a survey about buskers? I mean, again, now you know why the 16 to 34 age group, you know, will be reliant on digital and card payments in the next 10 years. So, they're not already. But moving on, we have in April, the Congressional Budget Office released its updated budget projections. Do you think the outlook is grim?
Melody, how grim is it?
As we mentioned on Wednesday's show, the annual federal budget or deficit is projected to rise to over $1 trillion by 2020 and to top $1.5 trillion by 2028. In the next decade, debt held by the public is projected to skyrocket to over 96% of the economy. So we can all agree that this is an unsustainable budget course for the country to be on. Justin Bogey and Romina Boca of the Heritage Foundation argue in an article that was published earlier this week that there is a solution Congress could implement this year and sharply reverse the projected course. The Heritage Foundation released its fiscal year 2019 congressional budget proposal blueprint for balance. That's a nice title.
It
would reshape the functions of the federal, the functions of the federal government, focus on spending on the constitutional obligations, and the article goes on and on. But the budget supposedly would balance by 2024, and it would cut over $11.9 trillion from federal deficits over the next 10 years.
And you think something like that could get a voice vote of approval in this Congress. But I'm not sure that anything of substance is going to be heard in the hallowed halls until next January. But the two authors claim this Heritage Blueprint is about more than just making the numbers work. They say it would free up Americans from an overly burdensome government and allow them to truly thrive. By reducing government debt and taxation, for example, they say the blueprint would create the conditions for more jobs, higher take-home pay, and a growing economy. The blueprint would do all this while permanently extending last year's tax cuts, which would put more money in Americans' pockets and sustain the economic growth already achieved or on the road to be achieved by tax reform in December. Moreover, the authors write, the blueprint pursues long-needed reforms to entitlement programs and in doing so promotes free enterprise and individual freedom. Now, here, briefly, are the Heritage Blueprint's five key points. One, bring spending under control. You know, currently the CBO projects federal spending to grow at a rate of 5.5% over each of the next 10 years. The Heritage Blueprint reduced that rate to 3, just slightly over 3%. Total federal spending under the Heritage Plan would fall over $12 trillion. Now, $12 trillion lower than what the CBO estimates over the next 10 years. And debt as a share of the economy by 2024 would begin to shrink and 5 years later would be nearly 23% lower than what CBO now projects, a figure that Melody mentioned of $1.5 trillion. Melody, what else is going on there?
Well, you know, they want to reform the entitlement programs and spending on Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid by 2028 will claim over 73% of the federal revenues. And so these programs, too, are unsustainable in their current form. And when they start messing with those, you're going to hear the people begin to scream. But it also comes with a heavy price tag for future generations. Tens of trillions in unfunded obligations will threaten younger Americans with massive tax increases down the road and a growing pile of debt. And the funny thing of it is, I mean, if we already look at the low wages, it's just not sustainable. I mean, the numbers don't work. And this blueprint calls for a series of decisive reforms. Some seem reasonable, others are unrealistic, some are even ill-advised. They want to repeal Obamacare. Well, you know, that's not going to happen. But look at the prices. People can't afford it. Modernize Medicare by transitioning to a premium support system and making key reforms to meet demographic, fiscal, and structural challenges. Never going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. But I do know what is going to happen. I hate to cut it short here. You know, maybe we can pick up on there on Monday. Dave, thank you for joining me today. Listeners, thank you for listening and spending the hour with us. So we'll be back on Monday. Until then, be safe this weekend and God bless.
Bye-bye.
And he left for me. That's too bad. In my